Duke Ellington's Backward Country Boy Blues from the album Money Jungle. It was Tessa Hadley's final choice this week, and she was talking to Michael Barclay. Next week, Michael's guest on Private Passions will be the food writer and critic Matthew Fort. Private Passions is a classic arts production for BBC Radio 3, and the producer of today's programme was Chris Marshall. Well, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome along to the afternoon from me, Ian Skelly, here to guide you through the programmes, which continue in just a moment with a visit to Italy in 1706 alongside Handel, a young Handel, on his very first visit to the country, inspiring from him more than 80 cantatas. Catherine Bott uncovers the story in the early music show. That's after a summary of the news this lunchtime. The time is 1 o'clock. It's read by John Shea.
At least 6 people have died and around 50 people have been injured after a powerful earthquake in northern Italy. It's the worst tremor felt in the country since the L'Aquila earthquake 3 years ago. There was severe damage to historic buildings over a wide area. Several church towers collapsed and a 14th century castle has been declared unsafe. The Shadow Chancellor, Ed Balls, has said David Cameron is looking increasingly isolated in Europe and that the American and French presidents recognise the need for a jobs and growth plan. Mr. Balls said Germany would have to be persuaded that the crisis in the Eurozone was a catastrophe for Britain and the rest of the world. But the Justice Secretary, Ken Clark, said Labour's policy involved borrowing more money, which he described as absolutely ludicrous. NATO leaders are in Chicago for a summit expected to be dominated by the withdrawal from Afghanistan. The alliance is putting pressure on members to guarantee an orderly pullout rather than a rush to exit. The handover of security to the Afghans is due to be completed by the end of 2014. Scotland Yard has confirmed that the senior officer heading the police investigation into phone hacking is to retire after the Olympic Games. Deputy Assistant Commissioner Sue Akers has served on the force for more than 30 years. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, is due to begin a visit to Zimbabwe today at the invitation of the government. She'll meet President Robert Mugabe and is also scheduled to hold talks with human rights groups during her 5-day trip. A memorial dedicated to the 255 British service personnel who died during the Falklands War has been unveiled at the National Arboretum in Staffordshire. The service, held 30 years after British forces prepared to land at San Carlos, was attended by more than 600 veterans and their families. The memorial is a partial replica of the cemetery in San Carlos and is made with stones brought over from the islands. And the weather. It'll be mainly dry with some warm sunny spells, the best of these in the north and west. There's a chance of showers in parts of the south. That's the news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at 1:03.
John, thank you. In an hour from now, music by Sibelius, played by the BBC Symphony Orchestra in our Sunday concert. They've come to the end of their Sibelius season. They chose to end it earlier this month with a performance of Sibelius's first symphony. You can also hear a brand new trombone concerto and music from a witty ballet by Shostakovich, The Bolt. Our Sunday concert is at 2 this afternoon. But next, let's join Catherine Bott for the Early Music Show.
Handel is not a mere composer in England, he is an institution. Critic, dramatist and pioneer of the soundbite, George Bernard Shaw, writing more than 100 years ago. And his words ring true today. Handel and his music are tightly woven into so many facets of English life, from coronations to the aria Lascia che pianga being used in ads by a certain London department store at sale time. And no, you really don't want that mournful plea for release sung at your wedding, trust me. It's easy to forget that before Handel took London by storm, he learned his craft in Halle, Hamburg and Rome. He first went to Italy in 1706, aged 21, and over the next 4 years he was given encouragement, valuable introductions, money and commissions by leading patrons of the arts, Cardinals Ottoboni and Pamphili, and Prince Ruspoli, who employed him as a household musician. He mingled with the great singers of the day, some of whom would later work for him in London, and he wrote, as his first biographer John Mannering said, an abundance of music, and some in almost every species of composition. While he found his feet as an opera composer, Handel honed his innate dramatic instincts by writing chamber cantatas for solo voice, with a range of accompaniment from simple basso continuo to full orchestra. These aren't mere apprentice pieces. They're wonderfully expressive and a joy and a challenge to sing. In today's programme, we're featuring three of them. Let's start quite simply with the cantata Figlio d'Alte Speranze, Son of High Hopes. It's scored for soprano, violins in unison and continuo, and tells its little story in three pairs of recitatives and arias. Abdalonimos, a poor descendant of the royal house of Sidon, is forced to work as a humble gardener. He is contented, though, knowing the dark side of the power which he must one day assume. In this performance, recorded last February at the Turner Sims Hall at the University of Southampton, the singer is Roberta Invernizzi, and the violinists and continuo players of the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment are directed from the violin by Matthew Truscott.
Lo spirito suo godè, tra disastri vedete, qualche cosa non chier, fra le tempeste.
Thank you. Thank you.
Roberta Invernizzi and the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment in Handel's early cantata Figlio d'Alte Speranze, conventional sentiments, ravishing music. A cantata roughly contemporary with his rather better known Dixit Dominus. Temperamental sopranos and superstar castrati dominate the cast lists of Handel's Italian output, but here's music from a rather invigorating cantata for bass, probably written for the singer who created the role of the evil Polyphemus in Handel's first Italian setting of the Arcadian tale of Acis and Galatea. Quopre talvolta il cielo compares the violence of stormy weather to the disdain of the singer's beloved, whose hostile glances are tyrants and whose haughty words are horrendous bolts of lightning. After all that tumult, the cantata ends with the aria we're going to hear now, a plea for the lady to have mercy. May the arch of your brow be a rainbow of peace. The singer on this recording is Furio Zanassi, with La Risonanza, directed from the harpsichord by Fabio Bonizzoni.
Oh.
per pietà di miei martiri sia mio bell'arco del cielo sempre lividi di
Furio Zanassi was the singer with La Risonanza on that recording of the final aria from Handel's cantata, one of only two he wrote for the bass voice, Cuopre talvolta il cielo, probably written in Naples. It's worth remembering, by the way, that Handel didn't spend 6 years stuck in one place. He made useful extended visits to have stage works performed in Florence and Venice, as well as Naples, and engaged with the musical trends in each city. There was no such thing as a national Italian style of music. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and the rest of today's programme is given over to one of my favourite Handel cantatas, the grand and passionate Delirio Amoroso, Love's Delirium. I'll tell you the story in a moment. This is a cantata for solo voice and instruments that is more like a scene from an opera, and it was written like that for a good reason. In Rome, public performances of opera were forbidden by papal decree, so larger-scale cantatas like Delirio Amoroso were really devised to allow Handel's patrons to experience operatic evenings without getting anyone into trouble. They all seem to have been delighted with the music and drama of it all. Perhaps it was a guilty pleasure for pillars of the church like Cardinal Pamphili. Pamphili, in fact, wrote the libretto for Delirio Amoroso, which was first performed at one of his splendid homes in the early spring of 1707. It's far more than the usual sequence of recitatives and arias, and begins and ends with instrumental dance movements, which is a hint that it may have been presented with some simple staging. The cantata depicts the nymph Chloris, at first mourning the death of her beloved Thyrsis, and then tormented by jealousy as she imagines him being tortured in Hades for having rejected her. She goes to the underworld to find him and restore him to life, but he still turns her down. Accepting her lot, she transports him to the Elysian fields where the blessed spirits dance. But all this, we finally learn, is only in her imagination. Delirio Amoroso is scored for soprano, strings and continuo, with prominent roles for solo violin, cello, oboe and recorder, those last two often used to evoke departed spirits or Arcadian shepherds like Thyrsis. The first aria is one of the most elaborate that Handel ever wrote, and it obviously made quite an impact. Later that year, he reworked it for his opera Rodrigo. Performing this cantata is technically and emotionally demanding, and not just for the soprano, but it's tremendously rewarding too. Before we hear soprano Roberta Invernizzi with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, directed from the violin by Matthew Truscott, I just want to let Handel's first biographer, John Mannering, have the last spoken word on the glories of Handel's Italian years. I think it is highly probable that whatever delicacies appear in Handel's music are owing to his journey into Italy, and likewise that the Italians are much indebted to him.
Thank you. lascio mai le brunelle. Lascio mai le brunelle negro di ti vedere tutte negro di ti vedere tutte. Lascio mai le brunelle negro di ti vedere tutte negro di
Handel's cantata Delirio Amoroso, performed by the soprano Roberta Invernizzi with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, directed there by Matthew Truscott, recorded at a concert given earlier this year at the Turner Sims Concert Hall in Southampton. Well, today's programme was presented by Catherine Bott. Another two editions of the Early Music programme next weekend, of course, and in the first of them, next Saturday, she'll present a centenary tribute to the pioneering countertenor Alfred Deller. That's at the same time, next Saturday, just after the 1 o'clock news, here on BBC Radio 3. This is Radio 3. Later this afternoon, we've more choral music in the form of Tenores de Altura. Four Americans with a shared passion for Sardinian singing. When they put a video together and uploaded it to YouTube for family and friends, to their astonishment, it went viral in Sardinia, proving tremendously popular with presumably the most critical of all audiences. The people of Sardinia loved it and them. But to this day, they've yet to go to the country, and they understand very little of the language there. Alla Jones hears their story, and you can hear their music-making in this week's edition of The Choir, which begins this afternoon at 5. But next here on Radio 3 are Sunday concerts, and this week a concert recorded recently at the Barbican Centre in London. It's presented by Petroc Trelawney.
Hello, welcome to the Barbican in London, where the BBC Symphony Orchestra today reached the end of a season-long exploration of the symphonies of Sibelius. The cycle ends at the beginning with the first symphony, described as an allegory for an oppressed nation. Alexander Vodernikov conducts the orchestra in a programme which also includes the UK premiere of a concerto by Finland's greatest contemporary symphonist, Kalevi Aho, a trombone concerto which will be played by Jürgen van Rijen. This is the latest stage in Aho's campaign to provide concertos for every instrument in the orchestra. We begin with Russian ballet, Soviet ballet to be precise, Shostakovich, with a piece that aimed to offer something of a moral to 1930s Leningrad audiences. The Bolt tells of a factory worker sacked for drunkenness who in revenge persuades a junior to sabotage the machinery by dropping a bolt into a lathe. Eventually the young worker admits what he's done and the saboteur is arrested. The Bolt had just one performance at the Kirov. As David Fanning writes in tonight's programme, the critics immediately turned on it, saying it lacked seriousness and that the characters were mere cardboard cutouts. But Shostakovich was not prepared to waste his music, making a concert suite which Alexander Vodernikov will conduct.
It's young Shostakovich, it's under 30 years, and it's the very special epoch in Soviet art. It's the epoch of proletkult. They were supposed to creating completely new art, very anti-bourgeois, very direct. Of course, it's satiric and it's grotesque music. This early Soviet art, it's not the socialist realism yet, very avant-garde, very brave.
Alexander Vodernikov. Well, we start with an overture that sounds rather more like something out of the 19th century than the 20th, before Shostakovich's rather more edgier language crashes in. Then there's the bureaucrat's dance, the drayman's dance, Kozelkov's dance with his friends, a tango. We meet the saboteurs. And finally, the suite from the Bolt finishes with the general dance and apotheosis. That applause for Stephen Bryant, leader of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. And here to conduct Shostakovich's suite from his ballet The Bolt, Alexander Vodernikov.